WLCR, Mount Washington, Louisville.
All right, out there, it has been a whirlwind of a week. We have a big stack today. We have a very good and interesting guest, top of the hour today. Vince is here. He's plugging stuff in at the studio. By the way, if you haven't made a donation for better air conditioning to WLCR 1040 AM, give us a buzz, 451-1040. You can also visit holyfamilyradio.org. I'm sure they'll take your donation. I know this isn't a radiothon.
It's always an embarrassment to me. What can I say?
All right. Now, I don't know where to start. We'll start with our guest. This is Happy Hour with Mike and Vince. I think this has been going pretty well for 2 days, don't you? The Tuesday and Thursday thing?
That seems okay.
It comes around pretty quickly. It's a little work, but, you know, it keeps us reading, so that's good. So we're going to talk about something today at the top of the hour that used to be a big issue for me. It still is, but I used to just really notice it when I was lobbying because at times we would have to run down particular legislators. And unfortunately, oftentimes we had to sit in on license and occupations meetings and some of the weirdest thing goes on in those committees. And it got me thinking about this whole issue of licensing. And I've always kind of thought for the most part, while it does do some good, I've thought for the most part that the licensing and occupations committee was basically involved in the crony capitalism of erecting impediments and protections for certain lines of work. And I know you all have, you know, probably had issues with plumbers and maybe your daughter has gone and her hair caught on fire by some unlicensed beautician somewhere. But we're going to talk about this today because I ran across a fantastic piece by a friend of mine, a colleague of mine. The piece is entitled Georgia Needs Occupational Licensing Reform. He works out of Atlanta, but we're going to talk about this more generally with Mark Hyden. He is R Street's Southeast Regional Director. We'll catch up and find out what R Street is in a moment. He's responsible for educating lawmakers and executive branch officials on R Street's initiatives, testifying before legislative bodies, drafting op-eds, and representing R Street at political events. He joined R Street in February of this year, and he comes most recently, and he's been on the program before, for conservatives concerned about the death penalty. He was also a campaign field rep for the National Rifle Association. He also, before he was NRA, was campaign manager for a Republican congressional race in North Carolina. Gosh, I'm having trouble. I had run in the studio, folks. Ran up the stairs. I was running late. He also has served in the legislative liaison public affairs specialist with the state of Georgia. And he, most interesting, this is, I'm going to have everybody look this up because I didn't know he had an interest here. But he's written apparently a very interesting book, doing very well on Amazon. The reviews are great. It's called, I hope I have the pronunciation right because I am a Catholic. I'm sorry, I'm a public school graduate. Gaius Marius, The Rise and Fall of Rome's Savior, an interesting book about Gaius. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Vince, you may know. You may be more interested in Rome, being the lifelong Catholic that you are. Anyway, we're welcoming to the program, back to the program, Mark Hyden. We're going to talk about a couple things. Mark, welcome back to the Happy Hour with Mike and Vince.
Mike, thanks for having me back on. And of all the words that you stumbled over, you pronounced Gaius perfectly.
So oh, fantastic.
Happy hour must include a couple drinks.
Wow. Actually, we're just starting that portion of the program. As I said, I was running very late. I wear several hats, as you might know. But anyway, it is so good to have you back. I really applaud the piece. But before we get to the piece and the book, I want to tell us about R Street.
Sure. R Street, we're a D.C.-based free market think tank that advocates for limited, effective government. We specialize in insurance, electricity reform, criminal justice reform, and commercial freedom. And those are some of the main issue areas that I work on throughout the Southeast.
Okay, excellent. So is it actually on R Street in D.C.?
It used to be, and that's actually the way it got its name. Its first office was on R Street in D.C., but they've since moved because they keep growing. They're up to almost 60 employees now, so now we're on New York.
Fantastic. Well, all right, Mark, let's get to the issue of occupational licensing. You can take it in whatever direction you want. I know you wrote the piece about Georgia, But obviously, I think this is an issue that a number of states have to deal with. And so what is your take on Georgia specifically? And then I think I'd like to broaden this concept and get Vince on the line here, because he probably has some thoughts.
Well, we can talk directly about Kentucky if you'd like.
Sure.
But for your listeners, you know, I think, Mike, you hit the nail on the head, because occupational licensing really is little more than a form of government-backed economic protectionism that often hurts workers, hurts consumers, the economy, and public safety. And just so your listeners understand, occupational licensing, what it is, it's a government regulation that requires you to get a special license in order to pursue a profession. So you have to pay the government for the privilege of providing for your family. So you pay a fee, but you also have to achieve oftentimes a minimum standard of education, and then you have to pass all these government exams.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled the numbers, Mike, and I think you'll find this fascinating. Kentucky is actually worse than Georgia on this.
Well, that does not surprise me.
That comes from Mike's friends in Frankfurt, I'm sure.
So Kentucky actually has the 12th most burdensome occupational licensing laws on the books. And this ranking comes from the fact that you guys require, on average, $240 in fees, over 460 days of education and experience on average, and the passage of at least two exams. All this takes a lot of time and costs a lot of money.
Yeah, but we should have the most highly skilled people in the country then, right?
Well, we do 12, education 12 so most. Well here in Kentucky.
Bus driver licensing.
School
bus driver licensing.
Well, you know, I don't exaggerate. The L&O committee is generally one of the most attended, you know, committee hearings, just from my own anecdotal experience, having lobbied for 18 years, there's always something going through there. And I'm thinking to myself, how many licenses do we need? Isn't there though a legitimate role for the state to license certain occupations, particularly like, say, for example, physicians?
Sure. And I'm not here to say that we should abolish all occupational licenses. I think there's a good use for them in certain areas. And, you know, for doctors, of course, we want them to be licensed. We want lawyers to,
Hold on. if one of my relatives wants me to remove a splinter, why should I have to go to medical school to be able to accept a dollar in payment?
Well, I think if you want to do it for free, Mike would be happy to pull that.
Why should I have to have a license to pull the splinter out?
Well, I think.
Come on now.
Let me push the point just a little bit, Mark. As a husband of a physician, I can tell you with certainty. Maybe she'll call in 451-1040. You listening, babe? She is far more concerned about a civil suit than she is about some sort of fine or whatever in the Kentucky Board of Medical Licensure or censure.
You know, this is a lot like having stop signs where yield signs will do. It's like punishing people for behavior that has no consequences in them, but it had consequences in other people. So instead of punishing someone for having an accident while texting, we punish them for texting while driving.
Right.
You know, why can't we focus our disincentives a little more carefully? And why would anybody in the community care if I hire Mike to come over and fix my plumbing? It's really none of their concern. If the plumbing doesn't work out, well, then you know, it's not going to work for me, but it's not going to affect them. So why does a plumber have to be licensed? And if the state wants to certify, that's fine. I might like what the state certifies. I might also not. And I might use an unlicensed plumber for some little job that doesn't require a licensee. As it is, I got to do it myself. So why am I subject to these restrictions?
Yeah, and I agree. And R Street advocates for using the least restrictive methods possible when mm-hmm. it comes to licensing. And to be honest, and you're mentioning some plumbers, we could really abolish several forms of licensing and instead rely on third-party organizations like the Better Business Bureau, Angie List, or Yelp, to let people know which businesses are run well and which ones aren't.
Mm-hmm. Well, but the unions,
and
unions in the same position, they would recommend, they would certify, Right.
Yeah, and there's a host of ways that we can do this in which it's less burdensome and less intrusive. We could also require some companies to be insured or bonded so that consumers are protected monetarily, or
right.
we could just allow inspections of these businesses to make sure they're maintained in good, proper working order.
Mm-hmm.
Each of these is a better option than many of the current licensing requirements that we have now.
Now, Mark, how did we get to this point? And I mean, people may think I'm exaggerating, but we have licensed occupations that literally there are no risks to public health or very few. Vince mentioned plumbing. I mean, I guess I could make an argument that if you live in a huge condominium association and Bob upstairs hires his uncle who's piddled around with plumbing and he floods the whole building.
I think we can.
Okay, fine. But I mean, how do we get to the point where we're licensing beauticians or, I mean, who started all this? And why didn't someone say, wait, what?
You know, and you know, you laugh, but you know, Mike, you hit the nail on the head. Kentucky actually licenses shampooers, and just to point out how bad this gets. So, if you want to be an emergency medical technician, someone who saves lives in Kentucky, you need 119 hours of education. To me, that doesn't sound that bad. But if you want to be a shampooer, you need 1,500 hours of education.
Better lobbyists. So, wow,
are you serious? Say?
That's interesting.
Honest to God truth. To me, this says that Kentucky is more worried about people having nice hair than being alive. So, yes, we do have a problem. And occupational licensing has proliferated. So in 1950, scarcely 5% of all workers were required to have a license. But today, that number is closer to 30% of workers have to get permission from the government in order to provide for their family.
That's insane.
And it just slowly grows every year as different special interests, different affected parties come before the legislature, and you know whether they're acting, the legislature's acting when they think is the best interest of the people or some other nefarious reason, that's how you see this growth.
Yeah, but as a functional matter, licensing becomes like the seminal form of crony capitalism.
Yeah.
The lobby group suggests that we need licensing because they have to require these things, blah, blah, blah. But most of the time, these lobbying groups are just trying to keep people out of their profession.
That's right.
And so this is a government-granted monopoly. You got to get a license. And I agree with your piece, and probably for me, it doesn't go far enough. But go ahead.
Now, Mark, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go.
All right. Vince, and you're absolutely right, because what this does, this creates a scarcity of workers. And what that does, it causes consumers to have to pay more money, because mm-hmm. when there's a scarcity of these workers, their salaries rise. And studies looked at this and found that prices can rise 3 to 16% to consumers. And it can have a national impact of over $200 billion a year. But it also keeps out poor people that can't afford to pay the requirements to join the workforce. So it continues a cycle of poverty and has all these terrible societal effects.
Now, you point out some research with regard to, are these things actually effective in protecting the public health? I think there was a dentist study or something.
Mm-hmm.
What did they find?
Well, they did two studies that I know of. They looked at the dental field, and they also looked at teachers. And they compared them to other states, because some states have much more stringent, strict requirements, and others are a little bit more laissez-faire about it. And they found that the stricter the requirements, it did not make the product that they created any better. Their services were not of better quality. All it did was limit the amount of workers and make the prices go up. But it did protect the current people that were in those professions. So it served essentially nobody except for those who were already in that profession.
Interesting. Now, you bring out another point that I never would have thought of, but you said many licensing boards require applicants to pass some sort of very broad background check, whether or not the position to which they're applying has anything to do with that or not, which means ultimately it makes it harder for ex-offenders to find work, and which makes it more likely that ex-offenders will reoffend.
Yeah, and Kentucky has kind of some quirky rules regarding that, and one that has to do with insurance sales. If you've ever been convicted of any sort of felony, no matter what felony it was or how long ago it was, you can never become an insurance salesman, which I don't understand that rationale. If perhaps you were caught with less or more than an ounce of marijuana 30 years ago, I think you, if you haven't been arrested since, you should probably be trusted to be an insurance salesman. Mm-hmm. But it's those kinds of laws that cause recidivism rates to be so high. And if you compare states with really strict licensing requirements as opposed to states with more lax requirements, you find recidivism rates are much higher in the states that place a large burden. So it's bad for public safety, and it hurts the general public all the same.
Mm-hmm. Now, politically, are you guys touching a fourth rail here? Do you find friends in legislatures that are willing to take this on, or is this something that you're having trouble getting traction on?
Well, a lot of states are moving in the direction of trying to reform it. Louisiana, when I say this out loud, it sounds funny, but it shouldn't be. They are the only state in the union that requires florists to be licensed in order to arrange bouquets.
Oh my.
I want to remind our audience that you are not listening to NPR or any other left-wing radio. These are conservatives talking.
Florists, licensed florists. Wow.
Absolutely. And it's had terrible effects on some people. But there was a push this legislative session to try to deregulate it. It got derailed. But other states are also moving in that direction. Like Georgia, they formed a study committee to try to figure out which ones they can do without. So we're seeing a lot of states moving in that direction, but it's going to take some time because it's an uphill battle. I can only think of one state in the past 40 years that's deregulated at all, and that was Tennessee. And they're looking at trying to deregulate hair braiders, which is another strange license that you have to have. I think next session they'll be back trying to deregulate hair braiders.
To braid, you have to have a license in Tennessee to braid hair?
Absolutely. There's a lot of states that require that, unfortunately.
That's what I'm saying. I saw this stuff going on in the Illinois.
I hope if my daughters are listening, pay attention here. Make sure we don't, on the way to Florida, don't do that.
Wow, it's just some really good work you're doing here, Mark. I appreciate it. And let me ask you this before I do want to talk about the book, by the way, because I'm really interested about that. As a public school graduate, I have very little historical knowledge of anything.
as an old guy, he was there for most of it.
As an older guy, I'm starting to be interested, and I want crash courses now. So I want to get to your book, but tell folks where they can look up, where can they find more information on R Street, because I like what you guys are doing.
I appreciate it. If they go to rstreet.org, they'll find all this information. And there's one other thing I'd like to share about Kentucky's system is that Kentucky is one of a minority of states that can revoke your occupational license if you fall behind on paying your school loans. So it creates this terrible system that if you don't pay them, then you lose your job. And if you lose your job, how can you pay your student loans? And it's a major problem in several states, including Kentucky.
Well, economics has never been a strong point for Democrats in Kentucky.
Where are progressives in Kentucky? They're out killing babies instead of actually helping people in human living.
Well, you know,
what's going on there? Yeah. Why aren't the progressives up on this? I don't hear this on NPR.
This is not NPR. Yeah. All right, now I want to turn to this fascinating book. It is getting rave reviews on Amazon. And when you texted me, a couple years back, said I'm writing a book on the rise and fall of Rome's savior. I'm like, Mark, is that you? I didn't know you had this in you. And then I look it up, and you're doing really – I hope you're doing well with the book financially. I mean, you've got plenty of reviews going up here, so hopefully folks are buying it. Tell us about what is your interest here, and tell us about Gaius Marius. Did I get that right, Vince?
Ask Mark.
Gaius Marius. Yeah, you're pretty close.
All right.
I didn't know you were going to plug my book. I appreciate that. But I've always had this fascination with Rome. Their longevity. They were an empire that lasted, over 1,000 years, and they covered an enormous swath of land and accomplished things that many countries and states have not been able to match for hundreds of years, if ever. So the more I read about them, the more I started to wonder who this guy was named Gaius Marius, but I couldn't find any books on him. So I started reading all the ancient writings, Plutarch, Sallust, Appian, and I thought, I write op-eds all day.
You should have checked the wiki. You should have checked the wiki there. Yeah.
That was the problem? So I decided I would just do it myself. And I find it to be one of the most compelling stories about ancient Rome. It's about a self-made man who was supposedly born into poverty, and he raises himself up to the apex of Roman society, and he becomes this great general who reforms the legions and saves the republic from collapsing from the incoming barbarians. And they loved him so much that they considered him the third founder of Rome because he'd ushered in this rebirth of the republic. But just like a lot of politicians today, there was something going on beneath his that shiny veneer of the politician. And he ended up being exiled from Rome, and he came back with a vengeance and caused essentially what were a few civil wars and helped to actually rip the Republic apart and started this domino effect that led to the downfall of the Roman Republic.
Hmm. Very interesting. It looks like a great book to turn into a big epic screen movie. Who knows? Who knows? I might be able to say, hey, I know the guy that wrote the book for this. Well, who knows? Well, I wish you the best luck on the book. Now, before we let you go, any other public policy issues R Street has its eyes on right now that might be kind of off radar for most of us that you'd like to let us know about?
Well, all of them are off the radar. Some of them are on the radar, I should say. But no, there's a lot of things going on in different states. Most states have what's known as a vertically integrated electric monopoly, meaning you don't have a choice of where you get your electricity.
Yep.
And we'd love to see that system changed to where consumers actually have a choice and they can pay lower prices. And I think that's an issue that's overlooked in a lot of states. And I don't understand why, but I think more conservatives are going to get on board with trying to restructure the system and give consumers a choice in what they want to buy.
Very interesting. It's odd you bring that up. I ran across a great piece over at National Review today by Robert Poole. It's time to rethink America's failing highways, and he's advocating that more of our federal highways need to become privately run. And I thought, that's interesting, but makes a pretty compelling case. We'll get to that. Yeah. Well, Mark, thanks so much for being on the program.
Hey, I looked up your book. I did a search for Gaius Marius and Amazon, and your book came up. And anyway, I don't know what happened. I've clicked on some buttons, and now it says in green, thank you, your order has been placed. So I don't I don't know what that means. But
Fantastic. Vince is a reading monster. He'll have it read by next week. Yeah. Mark, thanks so much. It's great to hear from you again, and thanks so much for being on the program. Keep me posted on anything else. We'd love to have you back.
Will do. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Take care. That is Mark Hyden from R Street. R Street, did he say .com or .org? I'm sorry.
.org.
.org. Yep. rstreet.org, just as it sounds, no space, rstreet.org. Great group. We need way more people up in D.C. advocating for limited free market solutions.
Gaius Marius, the rise and fall of Rome's savior. Yeah, okay.
Very cool. All right, now, let's just do this real quick because this is
nice. Who do you think you are, Rush Limbaugh, wadding up paper?
I was wadding up paper way before Vince.
Vince Limbaugh. Thank you, Mike.
I'm going to have my wife check my oxygen level. She says I'm not sleeping well with the snoring.
She snores a lot?
Oh, my. She's good. Now you've really done it. Okay, so
I'm in trouble now.
451-1040. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, especially if you have any comments on licensing, if you have young people trying to get into some sort of trade or industry that had trouble because they don't have a license, whatever, just give us a buzz. 451-1040. We will take your calls. This is a pretty interesting piece. I don't know if you had a chance to read the whole thing, but I'm drawn to these things because I can think of nothing worse. I think, you know what hell is? Hell is if you get up in the morning in Louisville in the East End and you have to visit the DMV to renew your license. And then you have to drive across 264 and 64 to Bowman Field to renew your driver's license. That's hell. And as I think about these things, I'm thinking we live in a relatively small town, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
Yet every day I find myself literally either sitting, and I'm not exaggerating, people know, 451-1040 if you disagree with me, people know, you're sitting or driving literally at less than 5 miles an hour on the freeways.
Did you see that guy passing you in the
van today?
No, in the parking lane. In the emergency lane. Yeah.
Was that you?
No.
No, not me.
Not that you know of. That's right.
So anyway, I ran across this piece today by Robert Poole over at the National Review, and he writes a very pretty compelling piece. There's a lot of moving parts in here, but I think he summarized it by quoting Milton Friedman, one of the great free market thinkers. Milton Friedman put his finger on what was wrong with highways. He wrote, "Highways are a socialized industry removed from the test of the market. Compared with other utilities, that means that for highways, there is no pricing, Major investments are not financed by long-term revenue bonds. Decisions on what gets built are made by politicians, not the private market. Proper maintenance gets what little funding is left over after legislators spend most of the budget on projects in their districts. There's something fun. You ever drive down Bowling Green where the Speaker of the House, used to be Speaker of the House, Jody Richards?
That's beautiful pavement.
Not a pothole anywhere.
There's that.
You can drive down through Kentucky and you can tell who is in charge of the district in that area. So anyway, it's an interesting piece, and I think it's a pretty compelling piece, especially in light of the impediments most of us face on a daily basis. And you think about some of the most frustrating things in life, and nearly all of them are run by government.
Well, yeah. Okay. So I'm going to recommend that we get the book and have a look at it, because I can see, I can see all kinds of things to talk about. Not the least of which is, what's the difference between post roads in the Constitution and internet access? Why isn't the government funding internet access for all the communities and all the states? If Congress is empowered to provide post roads, why shouldn't it be empowered to provide internet access, the electronic functional equivalent of post roads?
Well, it could be.
And so I can take a letter to the post office, they scan it, and it gets printed out in San Francisco to give to the council of the city to my objection to their latest ordinance.
Oh, you'll be going there a lot then.
Yeah, but I don't have to go there because I can post my letter at the internet post office.
Well, why don't we do internet post office when we have email?
Well, this is going to back us into why do we need post roads at all? And because there is an argument that that's an anachronism, that it was needed at the time when you had to cross the wilderness to get to the remote communities.
Sure.
But nowadays, do we need it at all? The railroads privately bridged all those land masses.
Interesting.
Meanwhile, the post office is still sending it over on a horse and buggy. And that's not true,
you know,
because they jumped on the commercial bandwagon pretty early on.
Yeah.
The mail went by train. So there's an argument. There is a broader discussion to be had on the meaning of utilities and what part of that
public
government funds and what part of it controls, and how do we implement this? Because I'm sick and tired of AT&T, and I'm sick and tired of Time Warner.
By the way,
why isn't there?
Interesting you bring that up. The news item just came across the bow, literally on my phone as I was sitting down in the chair. The courts have approved the merger between AT&T and Time Warner. That's what we need.
Oh,
a much larger and less efficient communications company.
They're both miserable.
This is insane.
At customer service. And I just got...
It's going to be customer service squared now.
Oh, no. Incompetent squared.
Oh, they're horrible.
No, this is really... You are not getting the advantage of economy of scale here. We're getting, how do I say it politely, cheated by collecting these outrageous prices for phone service, while you look down the road, you can see telephone connections falling over, broken open. Water. Every time it rains, the phone goes out at my house. It's just incompetence, and they don't care.
No, because they're
collecting
too
the money.
Big,
and then the infrastructure on this is wasting away.
Well,
it's too big.
But again, because it's a public utility, there's a certain number of government impediments that put entrepreneurs that you can't move into that market.
Yeah, where's our Public Service Commission? Why aren't we fixing this? We have got to do something. Absolutely.
Absolutely. We'll be back on the other side of the break. Stay with us on Happy Hour with Mike and Vince. Thanks for joining us.
And what happens with net neutrality?
Oh, I don't even want to talk about that.